Welcome to the Porsche Club Insider, your one stop for all things Porsche and PCA. Here's your host, Vu Nguyen, and the Insider crew.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 47. It's the Insider crew here, myself with Manny Albin, Damon Lowney, Robert Forsyth at the computer control, and our special guest, the person that you hear here every single episode. It's Tessa Hall. How are you, Tessa?
I'm well. Welcome to the Porsche Club Insider.
This is very intimidating.
I was going to say, she's a professional.
She's the only pro here.
I brought my own headphones.
She's on the real radio.
I know. She's here in our very humble podcast studio.
Yeah, she was telling us how you bring equipment just in case the equipment where you show up is subpar. So what do you think? Is our equipment okay?
This is phenomenal. It depends on what you're doing and where you're recording. If I'm at the track, for instance, I have a different kind of microphone. But it depends. If you have good content, that's all
it
that
works.
Matters.
It yeah. works.
We're, I think she's saying, on you, it looks good.
It does.
On you, it looks good. Well, it's what we have to roll with. It's great to have you. We'll go into a little bit more about your background a little bit later after we talk about our last week. But I'm excited to have you here because we go back a ways and on the microphone as well and battles in the cars. And,
oh, yeah.
She may not have seen it as a battle, but I saw it as a battle. anyways, but let's just jump right into it. First off, some housekeeping. If you like the podcast, be sure to like, subscribe, all that good stuff. We'd love to see the comments as well. Let's just go jump right into, and I'm not even going to start with you this week because I always look to my right when we talk about what happened last week. I'm going to jump and go to my left. What have you been doing, Damon?
I feel like the past 3 or 4 weeks, my weekends have been, I've done nothing. And I didn't do nothing, but I didn't do a lot of car stuff. But I did get my new tires in, and so the new sizes, I got Kumho V730s. They're a lot cheaper than Yokohama AO52s.
Because they're on sale.
Well, not just when they're on sale. Normally, oh. Yeah, like 200 normally, 167 I got them for. And then the Yokohamas in my size, 255, 3518, or like 345 per tire.
I was just about to ask if they're 18s, because 20-inch club over here.
Yeah, they're 18. So it's funny, you go 255, 40, 18, which is what I have in the Yokohamas, and they're automatically like 50 to 70 bucks cheaper than the 255. 3518.
Yeah. So, that's why I'm staying in the 18 territory. Yeah.
I wish I could, but yeah. I haven't figured out the offset or what, or even if I can do that with the GT4. So rather be safe than sorry.
So did you get a tire mounting machine yet? Because you get a lot of tires. And
I need to.
There's like used tire mounting machines out there that for not a whole lot of money.
The Mr. Tire, just to dismount two tires that I'm selling that I won't use before they're aged out, $62 to dismount two tires.
Really?
Mr. Tire. And I'm thinking, can't keep doing that.
I saw, and you put your Nankings up for sale. I saw that.
Yeah, they're up for sale. You know, I thought I'd really love them, and for autocross, they're just not the right tire.
Yeah.
So for a track day, great. Just don't expect the fastest.
How much did you use them before you decided to get rid of them?
I probably used 30, 40% of them. So not a lot, but they're going to age out before.
There used to be a graph with Hoosier heat cycles and your income. And it was like how many heat cycles you would go before you would replace it. Have you ever seen that one, Tessa?
I have not, but I can.
And it's kind of funny because it's like two heat cycles, you replace
them, you're done.
Your income is $500,000 to $1 million a year.
Yeah.
And I remember a friend of mine coming back to the paddock going, I am now in the highest income bracket. And we looked at him, we're like, what? He goes, I just got rid of my Hoosiers after two heat cycles.
Two heat cycles.
Because he blamed his qualifying time on the Hoosiers and bought another set of Hoosiers.
Yeah. Well, these won't do that. The Nanking NS2R is what it is. They're actually used for spec Corvette racing. So they're a good, long-lasting track tire. Just they're not the quickest tire out there. Mm. So,
well, I've got some fresh Trofeo R's that I need to make time and go out and battle it out with you this
year.
I actually have the Extreme Contact EWS, the Continentals, on the GT4 right now because I learned the hard way that some tires, when they say that the temperature limit is 45, they mean it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Delaminated one of them, and it was like the first, not the Continental, the one that I had before.
Yeah.
And it was first DE that I've been out with them, so then I had to get an entire new tire in 20 inches.
Yeah.
Not doing that again.
Yep. I mean, we talk about this before. you know, summer tires, especially very soft compound tires that are not made for like below 32 degrees, you really shouldn't even get into the car.
It was on the edge. I think it was 38 or 39 degrees.
And it delaminated.
Delaminated.
Wow.
It was on the driver's side front.
So well, you're not supposed to do burnouts out of your garage.
It was turn one and turn 10, I'm sure, on Summit Main.
Well, we know what you did over the weekend, but we're going to save that till we get a little bit more in detail. How about you, Manny? I was with you for part of your weekend.
I was surprised. Boo got a hall pass and joined us at Cars and Coffee.
I did.
Actually stayed longer than 20 minutes.
I did.
He did. He joined us for breakfast. We went to the coffee shop because it's warmer in there. And what was pretty cool is our friend Rich was telling us that he got a barn find. And this literally was a barn find.
And it's nearby.
It's nearby. We're hoping to do a PCA video. Because he showed me pictures. Every time you hear barn find, you kind of cringe because what people call barn finds is just like 9/11, somebody's garage that's not that barnish or not that much of a find. But this was truly in a barn or old warehouse, but it had about an inch of dust still on it.
Mm-hmm.
And and Rich wasn't familiar with early 9/11s. He's a Porsche guy. He has like three of them, but not familiar with early 9/11. So he goes, the guy told me it's a 71. And I said, well, let me look at it, the pictures. And, they were taken in this a storage space with no lighting or anything, just to light off the little iPhone camera. But I saw it on the right-hand side was the oil filler.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this isn't 71. This is a 72. I'm like, this changes everything. This is the 2.4 with the iconic 72 oil filler on the right. And it looked like it was signal yellow because it was painted black or brown at one point, but you could still see the yellow on it. So I looked up on Renbo what yellows were available at that time. So judging from what we could see in the photos, I'm betting a signal yellow. So he's put an offer on it.
Oh, so it's not a done deal yet?
No, it's not a done deal. He hasn't even seen the car.
Oh, wow.
Somebody else, the caretaker, somebody took photos for him. Engine's out of the car, so he doesn't know if everything's complete. The engine, I told him, you got to look for mechanical fuel injection. So that's when I offered. I said, you know, if we could come film, that'd be great to see the car coming out for the first time in 20 some years being stored. So,
man, that's a story I dream of, like coming across something like that where I'm the first person to find this car has been tucked away. I think the story.
We're not going to do that.
What?
With your 914.
Manny and I will show up and act really surprised. So like, mean. Oh my God.
You know, he's been hiding a 914.
Not hiding. No. It's just been.
I haven't ever seen you bring it out anywhere. No one has. Technically,
it's just been sitting at the back of some warehouse or shop. Right?
It's a back of a shop.
He bought this 914. A quick story. Listeners probably heard it. He bought a 914 out of Oklahoma. Drove it back. Decided to fix. What was it? Do an oil change. And you end up taking the whole thing apart.
No, it had. So over the years, it had a number of different color panels. They were all. It was all signal orange, but various shades of signal orange, and so. My goal was really just to have maybe two variations blended into each other. Like it's a driver. It's not a Concours car.
Yeah.
And, I bought it for cheap and I wanted a vintage experience, so on and so forth. Anyways, got started on stripping it down the half that we were going to respray. And then, my buddy said, well, you know, why don't you just strip the whole thing? And of course I'm like, okay.
That's the easy part, taking it apart.
Famous last words.
Okay, hey, why don't you just put it back together?
Ooh. Yeah, so, you know, and just life has gone by, and he's been busy at the shop, and so.
Anyway. So that's busy at the shop. They move shops. Did they move the car? You know how hard it is to move a shop?
The shop?
They moved the car with the shop.
I think the car has more seniority than probably every single employee except for the owners themselves and maybe two others.
Wait, so what is the timeline on this?
Yeah.
Are we hoping for graduation from Jonah? His youngest has never seen the car.
Yeah, my two oldest remember the car as Pumpkin, they call it. My youngest has heard of the car, has seen photos of the car, but he's never been near it. Yeah, and he's now 13.
At first it was Porsche's 75th anniversary, but that's this year and that's not going to happen. So I'm hoping for at least Jonah's graduation.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I know.
Do it for the kids.
Maybe a prom car you can drive, something to look forward to.
I need to call Chris Jacobs, and maybe he can just surprise me. Go into the shop and just do it.
You're thinking of the Lifetime movie, The Miracle Worker. That's not the same show.
That's not the same show.
Hopefully we can do this video, and Rich, the offer gets accepted, and Yeah, we were all pretty excited seeing photos of this.
So it's like terrible photos. It's like somebody took it with like a one of those Polaroids, even though it was with some camera phone. But in the background, I could see traces of a Mustang as well that's in this barn. I'm like, oh, a Mustang. And I think to his benefit, whoever bought the house or whatever, they're actually Mustang people.
Wait, so whoever bought the house did not know that there was stuff in the garage?
I guess it conveyed. I don't know. I don't know the full story. I don't know the full story. All I know is the people that own the property now are Mustang people, and they really don't want anything to do with
the
Porsche.
So the property came with a 72 911.
I guess. I mean, again,
it's probably old cars that
old cars. You know, they bought whatever, and everything just kind of conveyed.
Yeah. I did buy a house in Florida that came with a shed that did have a Chevy small block in it, which I did sell for like $400.
Not the same, my dear. Not the same. Not the same.
So I also found out that we're actually going to be selling our security business in the building.
Oh, yes. That means all of your treasures need a home.
So I have to find, take all my stuff and, well, the stuff I'm planning to sell anyhow, we're going to pack up.
So you have like a room full of treasures at the at the business.
Yes.
And
room and a half, really.
Oh boy! So does this mean that there's going to be an Albin fire sale, or are you just
not a fire sale? No? I have my attic where all this stuff used to be. So
it's more like a slow burn sale.
Yes, it's just going through the stuff that that I really don't need.
Yeah,
I can't display.
Or you have duplicates of.
But
or?
So we started taking the. We made a trip down there because my wife has some stuff too, and so we brought the Suburban down, and I think I'm finally going to get my wheels painted. Because I saw them and I said, well, I might as well take them with me. So
yeah.
Further motivate me to get something done with those.
You should drop them off at Vu's shop when they paint that car and they can paint your wheels.
Well, when you say shop, he also has a warehouse, little warehouse. So.
Well, combine the two. Put a shop in the warehouse and then you'll be closer to getting it done.
Whoa. Why is this all falling on me this morning? All right. So have you decided what color you're going to paint the wheels? Are you going to make it a surprise?
I like to get as close to possible as Club Blau.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
Well, I know the paint code. So, I mean, if you want, you don't have to get close to Club Blau. You can get Club Blau if you want.
I guess I'm going through a powder coating, so they don't have.
Oh, so you got to find the equivalent
to, to Club Blau.
Mm, very cool. Well, I got to do something very fun, and this was with another car club that I belong to, the BMW Car Club, and some of my friends invited me to. The ND Center. Any guesses? Oh, I'm sorry. The NB Center. Any guesses on what NB? It's the NB Center for American Automotive Heritage.
Not BMW. It
sounds like the mecca for second generation Miatas today.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Nice guess. So it's a collection that was started by Nicola Bulgari. Anybody recognize that name? Bulgari?
Watches,
jewelry, perfume.
Wow.
The Bulgari, famous family.
Did he lose a yacht in the whole oligarch thing that they confiscated in the yachts?
I don't think so. Not that I know.
He's been here for a while.
Well, he's still in Italy, but this is just one of his collections. He has collections in Italy or wherever. And this museum, it's kind of interesting because it's not my wheelhouse as far as cars I like, because it's a focus on American cars, more specifically Buicks from like the 1920s to, let me see if Damon knows this, or maybe does Tessa know, up to about 1940. Any significance that you two know of why 1940, especially 42?
Well, the wartime.
Yes. Did you know that?
The war, yeah.
So in 19...
I was expecting something more groundbreaking.
No,
in life.
But
that's to meet your partner in Jeopardy.
Yes. Yes, agreed.
Agreed.
So, I mean, I guess I knew of it, but I didn't know the exact date. And then, like, I looked at all the cars and everything stops at 1942 until, I think, 1945?
You do know when Pearl Harbor happened, right?
Yeah, I know, but anyways.
Well, they were using the sheet metal, I'm guessing, for airplanes. And
everything,
and,
everything.
Really crazy designs in those old cars right up until then, I'm guessing, right?
That's where, I mean, if you're a car person, and all of us here, I think I can say we are, like, the craftsmanship in all these cars were just simply amazing. Like, it wasn't necessarily built for efficiency, but comfort, you know, beautiful looks,
aesthetics
and the materials and the curtains in the car.
What amazes me is how big the cars were.
Oh my gosh.
But the seating area is smaller than my Z3.
Oh yeah. No. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not a big dude, and I sat in a lot of these cars that were like 20 feet long, but the steering wheel was like up to my chest. You know, it's like crazy. And you see all this stuff anyway. So the interesting is his love is Buicks. And I think it's because, you know, what did I say? The Vatican. The Vatican. So the Vatican, even though in Europe they had, you know, fancy Mercedes-Benz that they could have, or they had the cheaper end Mercedes-Benz, right? But the Vatican at that time chose to use Buicks and Cadillacs as their official car of the church. So as a kid, he saw those and he was, you know, mesmerized by how they could be luxury but still not be like overly flashy. So that's what he loves. It's a famous family, cool. Right? And they have a full-on restoration shop. Most of the cars he buys, they get donations from time to time, but he buys and they can recreate. They actually recreated a car that was in the lake that was only, it's a one of one. And they only had the front half of the car, and his team did the whole entire rear section of the car, and it's absolutely gorgeous. He took it to Pebble Beach, and this old man was walking up and he's looking at it and goes, "It's a good thing you have the 1931, what do they call the lady on the flying lady or whatever it is, on the hood, right? The hood ornament." He goes, "Good thing you got the right one on that car." And then this old man just walks away and he goes, what did he just say? Because they're all the same. And then he tracked the guy down after judging. He's like, "Sir, how do you know about this?" He said, "Oh, I used to build them." Okay. "And so why did you say, you know, you were happy that we had the right one on the car?" "Oh," he goes, "you didn't know?" He's like, "Know what?" He goes, "Well, some of them, the lady's eyes are open, and some of them, the lady's eyes are closed."
And they change from year to year?
And they changed from year to year.
And so this one was what?
So this one, the car, the eyes were closed. Yeah. And the car that they rebuilt from the lake or whatever, the eyes were open. And it was correct, but he had never, like, the guy that restored the car never looked at the eyes that closely.
Who's going to? Wow.
And it's hard. Like I tried to take a photo of it. You couldn't really see, but when you look at it close, you can see, like, when, you know, how your eyes have different texture or whatever when it's open versus closed. Yeah. I'm like, man, I learned so much. Like I said, it's not my wheelhouse, and I can appreciate all the materials, all the efforts, and how heavy, you know, chrome stuff.
The woodworking.
Oh, yeah. They had these woodies that I thought woodies was just like wood on the outside. Actually, the frame of the car and the back of the station wagon was actually made of wood.
Sometimes the spokes of the wheels, too.
Oh, yeah, spokes of the wheels. And
doesn't sound...
Anyways, crazy stuff. So I got to do that. And actually, the facility itself is a beautiful facility that used to be a drive-in theater. And they also, in between, I guess you have, like, little islands of where you park your car at the theater. So you could do a car show there, but then they have, like, a small, not a track, but a place where you can drive cars. Because the whole idea behind the museum is any of those cars can be, like, taken on a drive. Like, if Mr. Bulgari comes, he wants to take that car is ready to go, right? So it's amazing. And because it used to be a drive-in theater, they kept the screen of the theater, and then they upgraded the audio system for the whole entire property so that they can show movies and stuff like that.
That was going to be my question, whether or not you can still go and watch a drive-in movie.
Yeah. So, I mean,
where is this again?
Allentown, Pennsylvania. It's not hugely public yet. I think they're getting into their whole nonprofit, and they're still, it's fairly new. I think opened in maybe 14 or something like that. So
that's 9 years ago, though.
I know, but
time has flown.
Think about a museum.
2014
though.
Does sound like yesterday.
He's almost 50, so that's
No. I'm still mid 40s. Anyway, so it was a 3-hour haul. One more factoid. Before the war, how many car manufacturers do you think were there before the war?
In Pennsylvania or just in the U.S.?
In general. Just in general.
70.
No. Nice guess. What's wrong?
Oh, 8.
Well, you're answering.
2,600 car manufacturers before the war.
Oh, that I did not know.
Yeah, and in the facility, they had a poster of all the names of the 2,600 some car manufacturers. So they would share engines, they would maybe share chassis, but, you know, body built by so-and-so, and then, you know, carriage maker, da-da-da-da-da. 2,600.
So it wasn't even so much the mechanical aspects of it. It was more the aesthetics and branding things like that. Yeah. So if you really kind of winnowed it down.
It's still maybe in the
badge engineering sort of, right?
Exactly. So anyways, 3 hours away. And then Cars and Coffee, that was a lot of fun. I didn't get to drive. I actually parked
in the row of shame.
Man, like, what'd you come up
in? Across the street.
I'm like, oh, I just took the 5 Series up. Anyway, so, but you, Rennsport update.
Yes, so we had our Rennsport meeting. This meeting had about 30 people on it. So what we can say is they're going to have 3 posters this year, it looks like, not just one, so... For you collectors out there, they'll have one main one and then 2 other ones. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned for February 15th, 16th. It looks like February 15th is when the Rennsport reunion webpage comes up. It never occurred to me that they didn't have a webpage up yet. I guess because I've been so involved with it, I assumed that it was already up. And February 16th is another announcement. I think that's going to be the theme of Rennsport and a featured car. So, I'm sure you'll see it all over Google News and everything. It'll drop press releases. If you can get tickets to the Porsche Hospitality on top of the hill. If you've been there before, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm. It's a building on the top of the hill with a big, gigantic Porsche banner, of which we have had the one from last year now in our office, and we could cover half the building with. They are going to be like the hot tickets. If you can get one, you can't buy them from Laguna Seca. You have to be almost a VIP to get it. In fact, they were deciding what a VIP is. And all I could think of was, boy, there's going to be a lot of crushed egos.
Oh, yeah.
I already know I'm not going up there, so there's no expectations. But there's going to be a lot of people who think they are VIP-ish and should be up there. They're going to be sorely disappointed.
Yes.
When they
supply is definitely less than demand.
Under 700. And when you talk about an event that's going to have 100,000 people, that's pretty exclusive.
So I've been to every Rennsport since the 4th one. I'm guessing you guys have too, maybe even, I think Manny, you've been to all but one.
Yeah.
I've never been to the Porsche Hospitality area at Laguna.
Oh, it's like Willy Wonka's place.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. It's just
I know, right? Well, that's what I imagined. I'm looking up at it across the track and
it's so many people in there. It's like a, It's more to be seen. Mm-hmm. It's more people than there is seats and food, and it's just very crowded. And
you mean in the VIP section?
Yeah,
in the hospitality.
It's see, a big I want some good food, and I don't want to have to fight for it.
Oh, there's frou-frou good food and drinks and stuff like that.
But I'm not frou-frou. Do they have hot dogs?
Oh no, you get that trackside.
Yeah,
I'll go trackside then.
What are those frog dogs? You can get frog dogs.
What is a frog dog?
You don't know what a frog dog? It's genius, and I don't know why more tracks don't have frog dogs.
I've never had one.
It's a French cuisine.
A frog dog. Here's where we go into our culinary experience on PCA Insider.
It's a baguette.
Baguette.
Okay.
Hollowed out.
I can do that
with the hot dog.
Okay, I can do that.
Nice foot long. Nice and I guess all beef. I think it's all beef.
Yeah, yeah.
So you put the mustard inside.
Well, you forgot the baguette. You forgot the key step. So it's half a baguette. They buy the baguettes that's a perfect size where it's half the baguette, and then they have these steel steaks, and they take the half a baguette and they jam the steel steak into the baguette to make a perfect size hollowed out hole for your all beef hot dog. But before you put the hot dog in, they ask you if you want ketchup. Or mustard. Those are not.
That's not it, Robert.
Robert's trying to show some hot dogs.
Laguna Seca frog dog.
And so what you're telling me is this is like the French version of a corn dog.
Sort of. It's not deep fried, though.
It's not deep fried.
Sounds like a chicken bake from Costco, with a hot dog.
No, it's not that.
No, but there's a technique, though. So when you pump your, let's say you want ketchup and mustard, and you pump it into the cavity in a way where it's kind of flows down.
It's evenly distributed.
And then when you slide the hot dog in, it's
perfectly coated.
And it's a perfectly coated, but it's a perfect walk while you eat.
Yes.
You know,
and not
meal.
Get it on yourself.
Yeah. Right. And
especially if you have a white Porsche shirt on.
Yeah. You have to be careful when you get to the end of the baguette where your pool of ketchup and mustard and your hot dog.
First of all, you'd never put ketchup in there. What are you, 4 years old?
Of course. I am.
No. Oh, my God.
Ketchup only. Ketchup, no mustard.
A little bit of mayo and mustard.
And you probably like pineapple on your pizza, too, right?
No, I'm a purist. Only pepperoni.
Hot dogs are just mustard.
Just mustard?
Say no to the ketchup.
Oh, ketchup, sorry. Mustard, a little bit of mayo.
You can give me your ketchup.
So here's the thing.
I would say there are more people that put ketchup on their hot dogs than there are people that
put mustard
on
their hot dogs. That doesn't
mean they're right. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. When the public opinion comes in, I think ketchup is more appropriate for a hot dog than mustard.
So here's why I haven't had a frog dog yet, is because you go to Laguna Seca, and the Mexican food is excellent there. The burritos are great, and then the barbecue's awesome. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I have barbecue, I have my Mexican food and all the other stuff.
But you're not going to have that 3 days in a row.
Yes, so you could.
I could.
Mexican food,
I guess,
yes.
I know. As I'm saying that to Damon, I'm going, wait a minute, he could have it 3 days in a row.
No time for frog dog.
So
no
needless room. To say, Vu will get an invite to the beautiful people hospitality suite. I won't. I was when I was president, we went up there. But there's going to be a lot of disappointment because it's not so much your food or drink.
You don't go there for
it's
the food.
It's the status of getting that wristband.
You don't. I even
just want Porsche the food.
VIP hospitality. You don't,
for me, it's not even the status. For me, it's a great opportunity to see a bunch of VIPs all in one room, and you know, opportunities for them to, you know, do stuff with PCA, for us to get information,
to share
with you all, to listen. I could care less if they were serving frog dogs there or, you know, whatever.
He's sending back the caviar because it's not important. He says all this stuff, but yet.
So all I care about is being at turn one and seeing if they lift.
Ooh. Well, I hope they lift because otherwise it's not going to be a turn anymore. It's going to be straight.
I think that's kind of required.
No, actually, crazy enough, at a road test for another magazine back in the day, we had Johannes van Overbeck driving a 997.2 GT3 RS and a .2 GT2 RS.
He not said, lift in turn one.
No, he's talking about turn one. Is correct. Turn one is not. I'm thinking of the complete 180. That's turn two, actually.
Yeah, no, turn one, the really high
kink.
Speed.
It's a little kink. On okay. The.
Okay. He told me he's never really had to lift in the GT3s, GT3 Cups, and the RS until he got in the 2 RS. He's like, I got to lift for that
one. I don't lift on my video game either.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so... is something interesting, too. You're wondering about the turnout. So they told us that basically the ticket income is three times the amount it was
this time
in 2018.
Wow.
So that's they rattled off a bunch of different totals. So I couldn't really get a exact attendance total. No. But as far as the revenue, it's three times the amount. So that says a lot about the attendance. It's going to be,
absolutely,
as expected, record-breaking. Corral tickets are sold out.
Yep.
At $17.49. Boy, they're going to have to find some extra parking spots.
Pent up demand over the last few years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Plus, word gets around. So it's also, I would recommend that if you can stick around Saturday night, there's going to be a big concert. We don't know yet who the artist is. I'm sure they're going to announce that sometime during
the year.
It'll
be someone good.
Yeah, they're still working on the artist.
They were throwing around some names and some pretty big artists.
Porsche, to their credit, said this was a private meeting, so they weren't speaking to the press. Oh. But pretty much it was every dollar that goes in from tickets goes right back into the event.
Yep.
This is not a money-making adventure for Porsche. They want to make this the greatest ever Rennsport. So they said the more tickets they sell, the more money they can spend on the event.
Yep. That's awesome for an attendee, right?
Yes,
absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of having fun as an attendee, Tessa, before we get into the skid pad of this past weekend, yes, let's just roll back to when I first met you. You were in a 997 cab. Mm-hmm. You were in my class because 997 cabs are in my 996, I don't know why, cab, even though you had more horsepower. Not that you were just a better driver, but I was always chasing Tessa. And then we announced a few autocrosses together. And like I said earlier, you're here with us every week on the podcast because you so kindly recorded the introduction for us.
And I do have to point that out. In the beginning, in the video at least, when the car takes off and you hear the engine, that is not a 911 in the audio. That is my GT4. Nice. Just clearing that up.
Okay, as long as it's a Porsche. You made me a little nervous there.
Now, I actually have a picture I took in my garage, and I have my Rode microphone because I was running along the car as Gary was driving, getting these noises, and we're going up and down our street, and all our neighbors are going, what are they doing?
And that's what makes it authentic. So, and I really appreciate that, going the extra mile to get authentic audio for the podcast. But where did it all start for you? How did you get the Porsche bug?
It all started for me growing up. I loved cars, but I never really had the opportunity to learn more about them or do anything with them. And I certainly never thought that I'd be able to afford a Porsche. And then when I was working at iHeart DC, the morning show guy at the time on Wash FM, Luke Katz, had a 2013 Boxster 981 S, actually. And he knew I loved cars. So he said, well, sometime just let me know and I'll go ahead. And on a Saturday, we'll just go for a drive. I'll let you drive it. I said, okay. That was on a Saturday. I would have bought something Sunday, but everything was closed and nothing was in my price range in DC.
So it's almost like your 10-year anniversary this year in the Porsche world?
No, 2017.
Oh, 2017. The car was a 2013.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I found something through the Porsche used like dealership website. Like you can search all dealerships just outside of New York City in Larchmont. And initially I went to go see a Boxster, but then when I got there and I saw the 997, I was like, ooh, I like this one. And it was not really in my budget that I had set. It was about $7,000 over, but I went, I could swing it.
Now you also have other automotive interests too. Like I believe you're in the Jeep world. You've got Audi in your blood. Yeah. You've got a couple other things. Like, was that growing up you had this or?
I mean, yes. My mother was very strict. My dad just kind of went along with everything my mother went with. And she was also a very nervous driver. So there wasn't really any opportunity for me to do anything like that. And it started really with the Jeep Wrangler. I always wanted a Jeep Wrangler to the point where I couldn't afford one as a teenager. So I got an RC Jeep Wrangler. And then I ended up finding one that had been auctioned off by the insurance company that I bought off the person who bought it at the auction.
Is that the TJ that you have
That's
now?
That's what I currently, I've had it for 20 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, I saved about $4,000 on Blue Book on that. And it's still worth about the same, even, you know, 80,000 miles
it's
later.
It's amazing how Wranglers
you
hold
say
about
TJ?
Yeah, that's the,
what's
like,
the T?
It's like 991, 992, so TJ is the...
CJ was the narrower one in the 80s, so they were much more prone to tipping over.
And I had the YJ, which is before...
What's the Cherokee? Is that XJ?
XJ.
Yeah. So XJ, I love XJ Cherokees, sports, four doors. Yeah. Those are my
Those are really coming on strong, too.
And they handle really well.
That's the SUV?
Yeah.
You think they're like body on frame, they're just kind of like crappy handlers, but... You drive almost any Jeep starting with a Comanche, I think, and it's unibody and like really tight handling car for what you're driving.
The turning radius on the Wrangler was really tight until I put the suspension lift on it.
Yeah. But, you know, and is yours the 4-liter straight six?
No. Actually, mine's the 4-cylinder.
Oh, yours is the 4-cylinder? Yeah. So I had the 4-liter straight six and it was a lot. It was like 195 horsepower for a very lightweight Jeep. And let me tell you, it'll pirouette very quickly on an exit ramp because there was no weight in the back.
Well, with the weight of the lift and everything else, mine doesn't go anywhere very fast. Actually, when I teach people to drive stick, I put them in that car because if you can kind of get that going with all its lugging and everything, then you're doing pretty well.
You're good.
But aside from that, I also have, over the years, I had an Audi S4 that I bought as a daily, and then that had a coolant leak into cylinder 5, so catastrophic engine failure. I dumped so much money in that car.
I remember.
Was this
you
a 2.7?
Nice car, but man, that cost you a lot.
It was a lot. So I'm like, all right, we're just going to sell this because I actually found another engine for it. And for $3,500, put the engine in, which was like another $3,500, get the car back the first day, and I felt the transmission start to slip. I'm like, I'm done. Just done. We're just selling this.
Yeah.
Watch whoever fixed the transmission. It's been trouble-free ever since, right?
Actually, a dealership bought it.
Oh, really?
And we told them, the transmission's going, and it was throwing whatever code. And
they're like, we'll go through it, and we'll sell it.
I think I paid, $17,000 for it. I poured like another 10 or 12 into it, and then I sold it for 12.
So had you been in any car clubs before PCA?
No, actually, when I bought the 997, I didn't even know Porsche Club existed. I didn't know about any of the events, nothing like that. Since I bought it in New York, the dealership, for whatever reason, thought, oh, she's driving up from Maryland. She must not be serious. So they had sent home the finance guy. And I'm like,
not serious? You came up from Maryland and you're not serious?
I was paying cash and I said, why do I need the finance guy? Well, dealership stuff. And I had brought somebody up with me to drive my car home and I was going to drive the Porsche home.
Yeah.
I said, well, I guess you're shipping it then. They said, okay.
Oh.
So That was Monday, and then it was shipped on Friday. But in the meantime, I mentioned to somebody else at the radio station, actually Toby Knapp on Hot 99.5 at the time. I said, I got this car. I've never paid anywhere near this amount of money for this car, and I'm really, really worried that I might have overpaid for this. And he said, oh, I know the perfect person you should talk to. And it was Gary Baker, who at the time was the secretary for the Potomac region. And he was just about a mile down from the radio station, his office.
Oh, nice.
So the car was delivered on that Friday, July 21st, because I remember those dates. An hour later, I'm in front of his office.
So this is 2017. So when did I meet? I met you at the was it the Rockville opening of the Porsche dealership?
Or oh, Bethesda one?
Bethesda one? Yeah.
I thought we met before that, like in an autocross.
I think we did.
At Bowie.
We did.
Yeah.
We did.
I think it was that fall that we met.
Wow. So, okay. So that's how, so you met Gary and then the PCA world opened up.
Well, he said, oh, you should do autocross. I said, what on earth is that?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I'll just come out. It was actually Porsche Fest in 2017.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So it was at Summit and I thought that I would be horrible at it first off.
So I think we should, you kind of glossed over it. You're talking about radio and stuff like that.
Yes.
So for our listeners, share with them what you do.
So I moved to DC to do middays on DC 101. And then when I got out of radio full time, I became a government contractor. But I've done radio part time since then. So you've probably heard me on pretty much any DC radio station.
I love it when you send clips of the commercials you do.
Oh yeah. I do commercial voiceover as well. And sometimes you get interesting scripts and I'll get frustrated. Or I do a lot of what's known as cold reads, where I have not read through the script before. And I can tell within the first few words what kind of read it needs. But this particular one, I think that you're talking about, was for an adult establishment, and I didn't realize it.
I didn't want to bring it up. I just said I enjoyed the little.
And Robert, you can't.
I didn't send that one along.
Don't show that clip, Robert.
She's talking about a retirement home, right?
It's not X-rated, but yeah, there were a lot of flub-ups there. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! All right, so let's move into the skid pad world. How did you end up there? Obviously, you're an amazing driver in autocross. You do driver's education at the track. I've seen you at Summit Point and other tracks as well, but we've seen you a lot lately how dirty your GT4 is because it's on the skid pad.
Yes. So when I first started doing the track driving, and initially I was very nervous about doing the track driving. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to go fast because I was afraid what might happen if I lost control. So Gary convinced me to do it. He actually used his 996 cab, my first event, and that was actually the event that I learned you could downshift while braking. I did not know that. I was self-taught with manual driving, so.
Yeah.
So learn that, and because it was so overwhelming for me, typically in the run groups, you'll get about 4 sessions a day.
Right.
And so I would spend 2 sessions, probably not even the full 2 sessions, out on track before I was just kind of done. But then the rest of my run group, which was the first instructed run group, which is the green group in Potomac at least, I'd just go down the skid pad because nobody else was there. And I would just go around in circles. Nice. Go around in circles, going, why am I not doing this? So that's kind of where the interest in skid pad started. And the thing with DE is you only really get about 2 minutes or so when you're at a driver's education event on skid pad.
Mm-hmm,
and every time I thought I was on the brink of something, you get pulled off.
Right.
So we actually rented skid pad privately a few times. And then we thought, we've got so many people who are in the same boat in Porsche Club that really would like the extra skid pad time. Let's just create a skid pad program. So this is actually a sub-program of our autocross program. So technically, I am the Potomac's autocross skid pad chair. So I'm the one who sets up these events. And I know, Manny, at least you thought we did it once a year. I'm like, oh, no, I'm booking them as often as I can.
They used to have the high-performance driving clinic. And I was telling Tessa, I was one of the few instructors who wouldn't get car sick. So I would spend my whole day at the skid pad because I could ride shotgun all day and not get car sick. And I liked it because, you know, it was painted that skid pad at Jefferson Circuit was painted white in the middle. It was some very slippery paint. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't realize what we're talking about, a skid pad is basically a gigantic circle. What you've seen on commercials.
And wet it down.
And you're not going very fast. And you're learning basic car control. What I like to say, you're learning how the car is talking to you. Because the car will let you know when you're about to lose control. But most people don't find that out until they're on the beltway or the interstate.
Late,
and they're about to hit a guardrail. But had they known, the car was telling them, we're about to lose traction. So anyways, I didn't realize that they were doing this more than once a year.
Cool. We did our first event August 28th. And then because of conflicts with the Potomac schedule, I didn't do the next one until November. But we did 2 events in November. AM and PM sessions, we break it down between beginners and advanced. So you're also not just sitting there. We typically have two cars on at once. And one person, if they spin, the other person's sitting there. So we try to kind of pair it up as far as skill level. So two events in November, two events in December, two events in January. We've got two coming up in February. I don't have March dates yet because Summit Point's like, we don't know what's going on. Hang on.
And only rear-wheel drive cars.
No, you can bring anything you want, but if you bring an all-wheel drive or front-wheel drive, you're just going to be doing a lot of understeer.
Yeah.
You can do a lot with understeer.
Or I could bring the Camry, practice my left foot braking.
That too.
What would your Camry do in that situation?
So if you're on the gas, you use the brake to kick the rear end out. And you keep on the gas and you're riding the brake at different, and you modulate. You can get a front-wheel drive car to drift like a rear-wheel drive car.
Yeah. But we typically what I tell people is if you don't have the kind of background like you, Damon, have, don't expect to do that if you've never done skid pad with a front wheel drive car because it's a little bit more advanced.
I went to Team O'Neill in the snow to learn how to do that.
See, so, but you know how to do
like
that
for like 3 days.
But that's one of the things we had at Econ S out at our last event this past Saturday. And that's one of the things that I had him do. And of course, it's just smoothing everything out. But he's like, okay, I have the understeer. And he had it for the most part. I said, all right, let's work on trying to kick it out if you want. He's like, okay. I was like, all right, left foot braking, but you're not used to it. So of course, it's just jerking you forward because you think you're like hitting it smoothly and you're not.
Oh my gosh. I could not be sitting in the passenger seat with that. I'd turn green instantly.
It's funny. In a go-kart, you know, left foot braking takes a little bit to get used to. And even when you think you're used to it in a go-kart, it's still really awkward in a car to do left foot braking.
In karting, I've just learned to not really brake.
Lift. You don't brake. Yeah, lift a little bit.
I never had any issue in karting, left foot braking.
I never did either.
On a regular car,
I
guess because I had no choice because it wasn't like you're going to move your foot over. Usually the pedal was always for the brake on the left anyhow.
Yeah.
So it was just something you had to do. But the car, I could never master. Yeah. I was always jealous of the guys who could do left foot braking.
Well, sometimes what I'll do too, because it's all about if you want to kick that rear end out, you have a couple of ways you can do it. In a rear wheel drive car, we typically start people out with understeer, which is when you're turning the wheel, you're not getting enough turn. So in slick enough conditions, you might have the wheel cranked all the way one way or the other, but you're still going straight. That's understeer. And that's what gets most people in trouble on track and on just the regular road.
That's the worst feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm turning. Why is nothing happening? And then once they do get that grip back and they haven't fixed that wheel, it's still turned all the way one way or the other, then you're going to go extreme in that direction. And so when that happens, that's when you can get that rear kicked out if you then apply the throttle in a rear wheel drive car. We had a 4S on the main skid pad at Summit Point. That's right. And Gary, of course, hopped in the driver's seat at first to do instructor demos, and he's just powering through it because it's scary. Mm-hmm. And that's one way that you can try to do it with some left foot braking and everything. But you can also kind of do a serpentine approach to it. So instead of just going in straight circles, I know that's kind of an oxymoron, you kind of do wiggles. And so you kind of turn the car in more extreme as
throwing the weight around.
Yeah, you're throwing the weight around a little bit. You can kind of kick it loose that way too. So it's fun to play.
You've driven both rear engine with your 997 and of course mid engine now with your GT4.
Yep.
How is it different between the two?
The mid engine, once you get to that point of no return, like you're going to end up in a terminal 360, it's going to snap a lot more quickly. Mm-hmm. You have a lot more forgiveness in the 911s.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit more to get that butt out there in the 911s as compared to the mid engines. Yeah. But once you get there.
So once the GT4 starts rotating, catching it is a lot harder than a 911?
You have to have a little bit faster hands and you have to be a little bit lighter on the throttle as well.
Interesting.
Yep. I didn't like it when I drove mid-engine car to the Summit. I guess because I was so used to the 911 that I was missing that weight in the rear.
Yeah.
And it always constantly felt light. Like right before you're about to lose it. And so I would go through what we call the chute, which I think is the hairiest turn at Summit Point at speed. And I just had this like grip of death because I didn't feel the weight in the rear just planting me down. And I guess, you know, if I had more seat time in a mid-engine, I'd probably gotta get used to it.
Yeah. For me, the first time driving a mid-engine car on track was driving Karen and Wes, their Boxster at Texas Motor Speedway. And I had only driven 911, my 911 or 996 on the track. She's like, oh, let's go, you know, go out. And of course, I'm coming through and I get to this one and I could feel like the car is about to rotate, but I didn't think it would like snap and spin so quickly. Yeah. But when it did spin, though, it didn't really go anywhere. It just like spun and I was like in the middle of the track. And when it stopped, you know, when I put both feet in, I stopped right in the middle and I was facing in the right direction. So I just put it back in first gear and kept going. So, wow.
One of the things I tell people is if you do end up at that point of no return and you're going to start doing a 360, straighten your wheel out. So you're back at normal. Yeah. Because then even if you are going backwards, you're going straight backwards and you can still kind of sort of steer.
Right, yeah. Right.
Now, you're probably the, do you know of any other regions that do a skid pad only school?
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I know BMW Club has done like a few here and there. But
even driver's ed groups, it's rare to include a skid pad.
Yeah, so we're pretty fortunate to have that opportunity here. Yeah.
But if listeners, you know, if you, this isn't a driver's ed, so you're not bringing the car on the track.
No, it's non-helmeted.
It's not an autocross.
Average speed is like 25, 30 miles an hour.
It's not an autocross, so you're not being timed or competing. It's a great car control activity, and you don't have to have a Porsche, do you?
No, you do not have to have a Porsche.
I tell people just bring the car, because you're learning how to drive, not necessarily drive your Porsche. You're learning about car control and the car speaking to you and weight distribution. You know, you're learning how to control the weight going back and forth on the car, and that's really a key to high performance driving. You know, if you get a chance, if the track near you has a skid pad, or if they even do an autocross, sometimes we'll have autocross school will do skid pad training. There's a wet and dry skid pad.
I like the wet skid pad more because you go slower, so if something does happen, it's not coming at you as fast.
It doesn't wear the
tires. Is it just water, or is there something with the water?
So at some point, at least it's well water, so I think there's just some minerals in there. They didn't add them. I think it's
like
just
not,
there.
There's not like soap in it or anything.
No, but you could do that.
I think they do that with...
You can wash your car while we're doing it.
They do that like at the Street Survival, right? They put something...
No, well, at least not the ones that I've done.
Oh,
it's
really?
Been a dry skid pad.
San Diego region back in, the mid-2000s when I did their autocross school, they hired a little tanker and they had a triangle, like a mini skid pad, pitch and catch drill. And they would put down soapy water for that.
Yeah. That's some regions do that.
Yeah, you can do that. But, I mean, at Summit, they've got the sprinklers that just pop up already. So it's kind of nice. But the cool thing about ours, too, is because it is autocross, although technically they're car control clinics. If you have a licensed driver who is 16, we do allow them to participate.
Oh, nice.
You just have to sign the appropriate waivers.
Yeah. It's a great way to get
So hopefully in. If we have some listeners that are in the regions or they have access to maybe a skid pad near them, but they're not doing a program, can they reach out to you and kind of get pointers?
Yeah, absolutely.
So my last question would be, you mentioned that we have beginners that are doing this school, but also more advanced or intermediate drivers. I'm wondering what do advanced and intermediate drivers get out of going to a skid pad if they think they already know how to control their car?
You think you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing is you think
a lot
you know.
More practice for one thing. And I will say that at Potomac's main DEs with driver's education events at Summit Point, for instance, we always go counterclockwise. Because if you've never been to the main circuit at Summit Point, turn one, which is off the main straight and goes into that hairpin, one of the escape routes is right into skid pad. So if that happens and you're on skid pad, you want to be able to see whatever's coming. So that's why we come counterclockwise. Mm-hmm. So most people, even in the Potomac region, don't have clockwise. And once you switch it up, you're like,
feels weird.
I'm kind of not that great in this direction. And then eventually I would love to start doing even more advanced skills like Gymkhana and that kind of thing. Yeah. But
are people tuning their cars when they go to your event? Or is it more just kind of the practice and get seat
if
time?
They are, they didn't tell me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care if they do. Yeah, everyone gets the same amount of time. One of the things that we do that's a little bit different, at least than the driver's education events, is depending on how often we have to turn on the sprinklers and everyone has to sit there, you get between 35 and 40 minutes cumulative time.
It doesn't seem like a lot,
you'll be dragging afterwards, especially if you
I mean, you think about when we go to an autocross, we do four or five
one-minute
runs and we're beat, right?
And you're not working either. Yeah. This is just purely you're hanging
driving.
Out. We actually have more instructors than you typically would think that we would need because it takes a lot to go around those circles for 8 hours. But then also, once you're out of your car, you can kind of discuss with the other instructors that are standing there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so for the beginners, we appropriated the scoring matrix that BMW has. So it goes from like 0.5 to 5, and 0.5 is this person knows nothing. Let's teach them. And 5 is you are skid pad god, essentially.
Yeah.
But right around a 3.0 is when you can maintain oversteer for like a quarter of a lap. And then it kind of goes from there. So we tell people if you have a score of at least 2.5, which is mostly you're not spinning out all the time, you can sign up for advanced. It's mostly just to keep traffic moving.
Right, right.
It's very humbling for instructors.
Yeah.
Because when we used to do the high performance driving clinic, and you would see which instructors could not do a drift.
Yeah.
You know, they would just, We used to try to be able to, we used to try to do a full circle drift. Mm-hmm. You know, that was like the ultimate if you could reach and it was challenging. You know, it looks easy when you're sitting there on the sidelines watching, but when you're actually in the car, it's a
and it depends on your skid pad too. So Summit has, I think, I don't know, 4 skid pads maybe. The one that we use has a building right next to it, which is what we like because it's warm in the winter and cool in the summer. But it's got varying degrees of grip on the skid pad.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like I mean, I can for the most part sort of set the wheel and the throttle, but then you kind of have to adjust. So if you've got it cranked over in large angle oversteer and you can't move the wheel anymore and you give it just a little bit too much throttle, you're going around. So that was what I was working on Saturday. Like, how many laps can I do and complete wheel walk?
Nice.
And it's big enough where you're not getting like motion sickness going in a circle.
Well,
I'm a delicate flower.
Gentle butterfly.
Are you driving butterfly or are you passenger?
Driving, I'm much better. But as a passenger, I definitely couldn't do it. Like I can instruct at an autocross and do like, you know, a couple of laps with people, but to do it all day long.
Yeah, so many patches, it looks like he has the measles.
We do have a couple people who have the Dramamine patches, but mostly it's just once you've done skid pad enough as an instructor, even the people who are beginning, you know about what's going to happen, so you can move your eyes where they need to be.
Oh, very cool. So let's we'll come back to you, but also join in. We've got some news to share, Porsche news. The first one is I'm pretty excited about because you guys all know I'm very much into car audio.
I want this so bad.
And Porsche has released for the 997, 987, and early Cayenne.
And I got to say, it's a 97.1.
.1,
I think the 97.1, not the .2.
Yeah. Correct. So the new PCCM Plus, obviously with CarPlay. That's pretty cool.
And they made it look identical to.
Oh, yeah. It looks OEM.
I have an Alpine in my Boxster. And it fits in pretty good, but it's still the surround isn't the original anymore.
Yeah, the aftermarket has had a solution if you wanted to. Yeah, but it's not OEM looking. And you can get like these universal kits so that you can put a doubled-in radio in. But yeah, that looks so good. If Porsche Classic, if you're listening, we definitely would like to see one and do an install here at HQ.
Just for a 987.1.
Or maybe a 914.
What are you talking about? You don't even listen. There's no use sending
NPR.
Yeah. NPR. We're definitely not putting it in his car. He only listens to NPR. Definitely not doing
that. Strap an AM radio to the steering column.
Yeah. You know what's really cool about this, though? And I don't know if you get like a Pioneer or Alpine or whatever aftermarket unit, if it does the same thing, but you can set the windshield wiper speed, it looks like, your lights, your climate control, your locking system, all through that infotainment system.
Right, and those are the things that you lose when you do like an aftermarket system.
Yeah, or you didn't even have it.
Or you have to have a PWIS to do some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's, I mean, $1,500 almost, but man,
that's comparable, though. I mean, yes, it's on the
to get all that
end.
Functionality.
It's on the high end, but hey, I mean, you know, you're getting the OEM look. Yep. You're getting more features, and
I think I'm gonna have to save because I think I want that.
Man, listen to him.
I don't think I can go Pioneer. I've got to go that way.
I'm just surprised you're willing to spend money on audio because I mean, you really only listen to NPR.
Yeah, I mean,
oh no, you do
listen to other stuff.
You listen
not often.
To your reggaeton, not reggaeton.
No, not reggaeton. Reggae.
He listens to his reggae.
Yep, that I do.
That explains the beanie.
Yeah, exactly. Right. If I got my dreads under here. No, I'm just kidding. I don't think I could ever do that.
And for those of you that are dreamers, Porsche just released a configurator.
Well, the new version of the configurator.
Yeah.
What some people love and some people hate, of course, anything, the software that comes out. Still very cool. You can. Mm-hmm. But here's the frustrating thing right now. Is that there's so many limitations because of supply issues. Mm. A friend of ours, the one who bought my race car, is buying a GT4 RS. And, you know, they put like a halt or stop sale on some of the PTS colors. Mm. Even though after the beginning of the year, they announced that they're going to have all these PTS colors you can choose from. And now they put because of supply issues. And same thing with ceramic brakes.
Oh, really?
I listened to Matt Farah of Smoking Tire, and he had the issue with this Spider. But he's being told now that a friend with the GT4 RS that he has to get seal brakes.
I wonder if they will give you a set of ceramics if you really wanted them.
I don't think so.
No, you have to order
that logistically. Yeah,
I think Matt got his from Rick the Man, who takes them off cars that are going to the track and puts steel. So yeah, the configurator is fun, but when you put the order in, I think you get your email from the dealer later on saying, this is not possible. You got to reconfigure because
I mean, it's fun for me because I'm never going to hit the buy it now button after I configure it because it's a long time before I can do something like that. But just to go in there and just build something cool.
I feel like half the time the configurator isn't even for people who are buying the car. It's for like us just to go
to window shop.
Play around with.
It's our version of when we were kids in the Toys R Us catalog.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You go on to, you used to do that too. So you go to the page and you're like, 1, 2, 3, which one would you pick?
Oh. I never get it, but still.
Yep. All right, speaking of toys and stuff, we've got gaming chairs now?
Well, yeah, I did this more of a suggestion for the office here. I think it would be very appropriate.
You're wanting a gaming chair? Oh, a Recaro.
Yes.
A Recaro.
For every employee in the office.
That changes.
It's a Recaro.
The answer is no, because I just saw the price.
And how many races would be held in those chairs? Yeah. Probably out in the parking lot.
But look, it has the harness.
Every Tuesday, race to finish guys. E-brake.
Right?
Oh, my goodness.
I think that...
For the person that has everything, now you can get your Recaro gaming chair.
Yeah, it's definitely...
And it's limited edition. 900...
Of course.
911 units.
I think that's what they hope to sell, yes.
Yeah.
I wonder how they came up with that number.
I don't know. Let's see. We're not talking about 911s, we're talking about 996 Turbos with the latest video release.
Yes, so 996 Turbo, Nathan Mers did a model guide and everything you need to know video about that car. And if you thought his videos were long beforehand, this one
this is motion picture length.
Yeah, this is an hour and 34 minutes.
He's amazing.
Just 996 Turbo. I think we talked a little bit about this last week, but if you're in the market for a 996 Turbo or just want to know everything about them, this is the one resource you need. If you had nothing else,
if you had watch this nothing video. Else and you were thinking about getting a 911 Turbo, this is all you need to watch.
Even if you don't, but even if you don't, you can really look at, impressive at the Cars and Coffee telling anyone who owns a 996 Turbo stuff that they probably don't realize about their own car. And I got to point out to poor Nathan. Nathan got crap for not wearing flip-flops one time from a viewer.
He wore Porsche design flip-flops.
Yeah, the viewer was very offended that PCA allowed Nathan to wear flip-flops. I watched the video 3 times, so we got to watch it ahead of time, you know. And I never noticed he was wearing flip-flops. Anyways, what I also didn't notice in this video, which people were offended by, was his car was immaculate. They all commented how immaculate it was, but Nathan did not point that point of the crest. The bottom of the crest has to point to the valve stem.
Now he normally does. For whatever reason, that particular car he did.
There
didn't.
We go. It's a picture of it on
but
the screen.
It's
for
it's amazing. An hour.
The car's worthless now.
How long was the video?
Hour and 34 minutes.
An hour and 34 minute video, and our members pick up a quick shot of the crest not being
pointed. I have a name in mind of who might have mentioned that.
I love our viewers. Like, they watch and they hang on every word.
That's why we have to watch these things like two or three times before.
And sometimes we see things.
What we need to do is get these viewers as volunteers to also watch the video and say, do you notice anything that we didn't notice?
Yeah. So when you watch the finished product, it's all good. And we get these videos in a very good spot from Nathan and his videographer. However, we still have to watch it through multiple times.
Multiple times.
When you're watching an hour and a half, multiple times, stopping, taking the
after lunch,
it gets blurry. It all gets blurry.
That's why I just keep my GT4 so dirty from skid pad. Nobody's going to tell whether or not the crest is pointing at the valve stem.
Oh, great. Now you're just validating Damon for keeping his
new
car
excuse.
Dirty.
Yeah. But yeah, so that came out last week. So hopefully you've watched it. If you haven't, head to our YouTube channel. This week we have a video from last year's Literature and Toy Meet in LA that we will be releasing, and will be on our YouTube channel by the time this podcast drops.
All right. And I'm going to confess, this is a hard edit, and it's not hard for why you think it's a hard edit. So I was there. I was with Ilko, our advertising director for Pano, and, you know, we had plans for going to the Lit Meet and shoot cool things that we see. I intro the video, just another normal weekend, right? However, the night before, I went to dinner with my mom and I ate something. And to this day, I don't know what it is. And I do have allergies to some things, but I woke up and it looked like I got Botox on my lips. My upper lip was like
That's all the rage.
The real reason you came to LA.
It was three times the size that it normally was. And I woke up, I'm like, what the heck? And I got to go to the lit meet. I'm like, well, maybe, you know how like you like suck down on your lips to make them small, right? I'm like, maybe if I just do that all day, no one will notice. And immediately as I walked into the lobby of the hotel, Ilko just gives me this look. He's like, what the heck happened to you? I'm like, you can tell? He's like, no, it's a,
you know. You should have told him it was Botox.
He's like, I just happened to notice. I'm like, bro, I feel like I've got like a, you know, a 5-pound like steak hanging off of my lip.
Well, now people are going to watch the video.
Exactly. More
well, only lip. The PCA insiders are going to enjoy looking for this because yeah. I've asked Damon to kind of edit around it. And
is it is like drag queen lips?
Or? It doesn't look that. No. You have to kind of know.
Like I said, he's editing around it, but there's still some shots where you'll see me. But you know, how the raw footage where like I'm, you know, introducing the video and it's like me up close. Oh my gosh, it looks so bad. Like my
how much would it cost to play the flaming lip song?
Right. It was terrible. Anyway, so thank you for editing around, and that's a little insider for you guys listening when you see this video. If my lips do not look normal, again, I don't know what I ate. I took my Zyrtec and it still didn't die down, but it was embarrassing.
That sounds like another NFT in the making.
Embarrassing.
Yep.
And you got to, you dropped the 356 OMR.
Yeah, so I almost forgot about that. Yeah, Skip Carter, who is our club racing news editor and longtime volunteer. I've known him for a long time since he lives in San Diego, and that's where I'm from. And so I got to drive his 1964 356 SC.
SC.
So
that's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. It is. So what's kind of interesting is that the only other 356 I've driven was a 56 Speedster that had 64 SC brakes, transmission, and engine. And that was a great car. Although it was, if you watch the video, it's rough. It's as it was. It hasn't been repainted, restored. And but the owner loves it that way. You hop over to Skip's car and, you know, you can pull the seat up to where it needs to be for somebody who's as tall as I am, about 5'10". The shifter is 5'9". I'm sorry.
Right now.
Sorry. I tried to hold that in, but I couldn't. You said 5'10".
Yeah, I'm 5'10". You want to bet this?
What shoes are you wearing?
I'm 5'9". We're going to have to do a comparison.
We are. After this podcast.
If he was serious when he says as tall as I am.
I know. It's like he's 6'8".
Oh, heck no. This other guy, yeah. Anyways, go ahead, the speedster, it was tough. I couldn't move the seat forward. And it was a really long shifter throw. But this Skips SC, I could move the seat where it needed to be. The shifter was a lot tighter and shorter throw. And the car just in general felt more, I mean, like it came from the factory like that, which it did. It was a very eye-opening experience. And it drove newer than 1964. A lot easier to cruise in and be comfortable. So you could daily drive that if it weren't so small and expensive.
It's in my favorite color combo for
Slate gray.
Slate gray over red,
with the red,
which I think originally you said it was brown, which
it was brown.
The switch over to red is money. Like that's definitely the way to go. What a gorgeous
Skip
car.
Skip bought this car in Nice in France back in the 1970s.
Wow.
Which is crazy. So back when he was in college, I believe. Oh, so really cool amazing. Car.
So Manny, SC versus Super 90. What's the difference engine-wise?
I don't think they had a Super 90 for I think the C is the
The C is the version of
I think
the
Super 90 was a B.
Was a B, right.
Yeah, so this is Damon asked me, and I'm pretty sure the SC stands for Super C. So they saw the Carrera, so they weren't, it wasn't like the 911 SC Super Carrera.
Right.
But this, I believe, is a Super C.
I think you're right. When I was doing some research, and I also had the I filmed some of the copy or reproduction manual that Skip had, and I was able to see that it's the 1600C and the 1600 SC or Super C.
Yeah.
So you were right on that one.
Also, since you are our official 963 expert, is there anything you want to share from this weekend?
I want to call myself an expert, more someone who likes to watch see how it's going.
Well, so do we have to say spoiler alert? Because this is going to be next week.
Well, yeah, people are going to know who won the race already.
Okay, so it's not spoiler.
So we don't know who won. We just
this is Roar, right?
This is the Monday after qualifying that we're recording this, and Nick Tandy wrecked one of the 963s during practice, not practice, excuse me, qualifying. Mm. And he was doing a really great lap going into the bus stop, and that's when
he ran
out of talent and went into the tire wall. So Felipe Nasr took the other one, and he qualified second. So that was good. The GT3Rs and GTD and GTD Pro, and there's an article out on eBrake that's coming out. By the time you read this, it's already been out explaining the differences. But essentially, GTD Pro is for pro drivers. Same car they use, the 911R, or GT3R, rather. And the GTD class is a mixture of amateur and pro. And that gets really complicated because they have different levels of experience. And some drivers like won't run in the series for a couple of years, so they get bumped down to amateur, even though they're very pro, much pro, but they can run as amateur, and it's, I think, a lot of politics involved. Either way, Porsche did not qualify very well because of these balances of performance issues. So let's hope for maybe rain as a great equalizer and for some unreliability on some of our competitors' parts so we can move up. 24 hours is a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw a quick Nick Tandy went from hero to zero in a 20-minute session. So you can imagine over 24 hours, a lot can happen.
A lot can happen.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, but if you, well, actually, it's once again, the race would have been over by the time you listen to this. So usually if you don't subscribe to eBrake, subscribe to it because I try to write a guide to watching some of these key races. And the next one's going to be the 12 hours of Sebring, which is very cool because they're also going to have a race on Friday, which is the WEC cars. So there's two 963 teams running, one for Europe, one for the United States. That's the WEC is the European series. And there's two different teams. Penske is running the U.S. And actually, Penske's running Europe, too. What am I saying? But it'll be fun to watch them run both on Friday and Saturday.
It's, so, I think it's 1,000 miles. Does WEC run at the same time as the IMSA?
No, not this time.
They separated.
Supposedly, I think next year, I think they're going to mix both of them. So cool. In IMSA, it's called Le Mans Daytona LMD. H is hybrid. And in Europe, it's called hypercar. So it's LMH, Le Mans hypercar. That's a little confusing for viewers. And in the 24 Hours of Daytona, there's five classes. Three of them run Porsche.
Just look at the color of those headlights.
Or what I do is I look at IMSA live timing, and I can keep track of how Porsche is doing. But
I did live announcing at Summit for it was the open wheel racing, and I was down by the carousel part. So I'm on the opposite side of where timing is. And so I could kind of see the times, but when the timing stopped, I'm trying to announce, and I've got binoculars, and I'm trying to look at turn five, which is from the visitor center, not very visible, even with binoculars. And I'm going, blue car passed white car. Those numbers are so tiny in that little wing. I can't see it.
Manny mentioned eBrake News. For those that are not familiar with eBrake News, maybe Damon, just a real quick spiel on eBrake News.
Yeah. eBrake News is our PCA's weekly newsletter that the PCA National Office sends out every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. And then we have a recap on the first of every month. And it's where you see everything newsworthy in the Porsche world or the PCA world, or even if it's not newsworthy and it's just a cool story, you can find it in eBrake News. We share things from PCA.org as well as anything good across the web. So stay up to date. Subscribe to eBrake News.
Yep. And that's the best thing to prepare you for your weekend adventures with all your Porsche friends, right?
Exactly.
All right. So let's quick update on upcoming events. By the time you're listening to this, this week we have Nathan Merz on Tech Tactics Live. You won't want to miss that. He's going to give us a market update. Market update, right?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, when they're listening to this, it'll be the Wednesday.
Yep. And then phase one registration for Porsche Parade will also open February 1st. So make sure you sign up. Look at the parade registration page in advance is my recommendation. Lots of options, and et cetera, and just kind of know what you're getting into. June 18th through the 24th is when parade will be, and it'll be in beautiful Palm Springs, a warm Palm Springs.
I was going to say, hopefully you've got the cooled seats.
You got to love the logo because that's pretty much accurate. We're right on the face of the sun.
This is true.
Yeah.
Make sure that you cover any kind of metal shiny bits with towels or something.
Yeah.
I used to get made fun of a lot for always having a towel in any car. I'm like, just drape it on that steering wheel, on the shifter. Yeah, I'm so much happier than you are getting branded with something.
Oh, yeah. I cover, especially for some of our older cars, just covering the dash so that you don't crack. Registration for Works Reunion Amelia is still open. I think we, of course, Judge is already sold out. We have about 100 spots left in the corral. So don't delay if you want a spot in the corral.
It will be gone in a couple weeks, probably.
Tech Tactics East, we've talked about that. Saturday is sold out, and we have about 60 spots left for Sunday. So love to see you there in person. And anything else before we sign off?
Tessa's videos, which are very good, describing oversteer and understeer, and they had great visuals. Your camera angles are perfect on the wheels, so you can really see how much steering input she's putting on with understeer, because I used to tell students, if you're turning that steering wheel two times, that's too much.
Too much.
And I would actually pull them over and say, now turn the steering wheel two times, like walk outside the car and look at how far your steering angle is. And this is where we're going to go when the car gets tripped. So anyway, she does a really good job. We're going to have those videos right after people are watching YouTube. Stay on the video. It's going to pick up right as soon as this podcast ends. We'll have her videos at the end of it.
I did want to add one PSA for especially 981 GT4 owners.
Yep.
It seems like there might be a thing with the catalytic converter. You saw this.
Oh, I know this.
Yeah. It happened on the track, and it seems to be the case for those that are tracked for GT4s of the 981 generation. The O2 bung will blow out. That weld fails.
And when it blows out, it leaves a hole.
Where hot exhaust gas goes up and flames, and it did about $12,000 worth of
wiring
damage.
Wiring
harnesses, intakes. I had a control arm that I had to replace. I had to replace a 2-foot section of the body wiring harness, the entire engine wiring harness.
How quickly did this happen after it blew out?
So if you look back at the dash cam video, Gary was actually driving. He was on Summit Main, and going into turn four was when I started to hear the difference. Like I could hear the car going, just basically dying, essentially. Like he wasn't on the gas.
Right.
But he had two cars in front of him that were going slower into turn five, which is a sharper turn for those who've not been there. So when he went to get back on the throttle after five, nothing happened.
Mm.
And he kept trying to crank the car, and it would crank, but it wouldn't do anything.
Mm.
And we didn't know what had happened because there was no visible smoke or anything, thankfully, because the fuel line started to melt.
Oh, my gosh.
But did not melt all the way through.
So for a minute, you blew out this O2 sensor.
Everything was just gone.
That quickly.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of heat coming out there. I mean, you're taking a little torch to
the area. I never would have thought that. That's very scary.
So it wasn't until we got it to the shop and they got the exhaust manifold off and...
It couldn't have been corroded because your car's so new.
No, so actually it's a 2016, of course, because it's a 981 GT4. I bought it from a dealership, not a Porsche dealership, but the previous owner had straight piped it with a fab speed. Mm. And so the dealership put the stock exhaust on. Mm-hmm. So the cat itself was just over 2 years old when this happened.
Wow.
That's so weird.
But it's not the only time it's happened. I posted that video actually when I picked it up from the shop because I was showing people like how the O2 bung had blown out.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody sent me a screenshot of another shop, I think, I don't even know where it was, somewhere on the East Coast, saying, hey, PSA, for all 981 GT4 owners, we're seeing this a lot.
Wow.
So I don't know if it's going to be like another IMS bearing sort of thing. Yeah. I hope, so I can get paid back, because it was not covered.
Oh, man. Well, the good news is not more damage and didn't ruin the car, and you're back on the road again.
And nobody was hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, with that, I'm going to say thanks for listening. If you aren't currently a PCA member and own a Porsche, grab that VIN and head to PCA.org. If you don't currently own a Porsche, check out our test drive program again at PCA.org. Remember to follow our podcast program page or Instagram page. Behind the scenes, photos, videos, Porsche Club Insider, all one word. You can always send us a message or email at podcast@PCA.org. And again, love the likes, the comments, and of course, subscribe. Until next time, stay safe and we'll catch you down the road.